You're back. Good. Come, sit where the breeze isn't so sharp. I've saved your place. We've come to the third turning in Perseus's tale. The part with the lie. Do you remember the chest? The sea? That quiet drifting with Danae and her baby boy curled close beneath the stars? Well, time moves even when we sleep, and Perseus did grow. First his hands too big for the tunic Danae stitched, then his voice, deeper, scraping like stone against stone. But always his eyes, those stayed soft, like hers, watchful. He was happy once, or nearly, on Seriphos, the island of stones and slow hours, but happiness on borrowed land never quite takes root, does it? Now I must tell you about the king, Polydectes. The name means many receivers, though what he mostly received was flattery. A man slick as oil and twice as hard to wash from memory. He wore perfumes that stuck to your throat and robes that trailed like seaweed behind him. I remember the way he'd linger too long in a doorway, smiling. Always smiling, Danae never smiled back. When Perseus was still too young to understand why, the king would visit their cottage with offerings. Fruit out of season, little carved figurines, even a golden hairpin, though Danae never touched it. He called them gestures of goodwill. I called them bait. Don't tell anyone, but I never liked spiders. Not even the ones that spin silver in the olive trees. And Polydectes, he fancied himself a spider. Careful. Patient. Spinning his little web out of dinners and diplomacy. But even spiders forget the wind. At first, he kept his distance. After all, a child is a poor rival. But Perseus grew. And with each year, Polydectes looked at Danae less like a challenge and more like something owed to him. I remember the look in Perseus's eyes the first time he caught the king watching his mother for too long. It wasn't fear. It was the first seed of fury. But you must understand, Polydectes didn't need to rage. He needed only to wait and whisper and smile. Shall we go on? The feast is about to begin. They called it a celebration, a wedding feast if you believed the invitations, but no one ever saw the bride. That should have been the first clue. The great hall was carved from old stone, slick with salt where the sea winds slipped in, torches sputtered, tables groaned under platters of roasted fish, figs soaked in honey, barley cakes stamped with the king's seal. Polydectes spared no expense. He wanted to be seen, not just as ruler, but as a man desired. Generous. Beloved. He stood in the center of it all, wine in one hand, the other open as men stepped forward one by one to lay their gifts at his feet. A horse, a silver shield, a necklace strung with coral, token after token until the pile gleamed like a treasure hoard. But what he wanted wasn't there, not yet. And then Perseus. Tall now, stronger than most grown men, though still untried. His hair dark as ship's rope, his jaw set the way Danae's would be when she said no and meant it. He came with empty hands. Some say he was foolish to come at all. I don't think so. He came because Danae refused to attend. And someone had to represent her. Someone had to stand between her and Polydectes. But pride is a dangerous shield. It leaves your back exposed. The king welcomed him with too much cheer. Ah, Perseus, our young son of Seriphos! And what gift have you brought to honor your king's union? You should have heard the hush. It fell like a wave pulling back before a crash. Perseus crossed his arms. I didn't know we were expected to bribe our king for pretending to love. Ah, he had his mother's tongue, too. Sharp, lovely, and just a little too fast for safety. The king's eyes gleamed, but his smile didn't falter. Not a bribe, boy, a gift. Surely even you can manage a gift? I'll bring one then, Perseus said, voice steady but too loud, trying to match the room's laughter with defiance. I'll fetch you a gift worthy of a king, the head of Medusa herself. How's that for a wedding present? And there it was. The lie. He didn't mean it, not really. It was the kind of thing you say when you're young and angry and trying not to show how small you feel in the room. He meant to mock. But words? Words can be trickier than curses. They curl into the air like threads and tie themselves to fates before we know what we've offered. I remember the silence that followed. I hated it. Polydectes only chuckled and raised his cup. Then we'll expect you back, brave Perseus, with your gift in hand. I wish he had refused. I wish someone had laughed it off. But instead, Perseus bowed his head, jaw clenched, and left the hall. The trap had been laid. Shall we follow him outside into the morning? It's quieter there, but no safer. The sun rose clean and golden the next morning. That sort of cruel light that makes everything seem honest. But it wasn't. Not on Seriphos, not that day. Perseus stood at the edge of the olive grove, fists buried in the folds of his cloak, watching the sea as if it might hand him an answer. He hadn't slept. His pride was still louder than his fear, but only just, the kind of loud that echoes when the room is empty. And behind him, the trap closed. Polydectes didn't send soldiers. That wasn't his way. No, he sent messengers, friendly ones, with smiles and scrolls and the careful voice of someone who is only honoring your word. The king was quite moved by your offer, they said. Naturally, he wouldn't dream of stopping such a noble quest. Noble quest, Perseus muttered. I remember how he said it, like spitting a bitter seed. But the message went deeper still. Polydectes had changed his mind, they said. He would not marry after all. He would remain king and bachelor for the people's sake. And Danae, well, she would remain his honored guest until Perseus returned. Do you see it now? There was no bride. There never had been. The feast was bait. The boast was the spring. And now the son was gone and the mother alone. Danae wept that day, but not in front of him. She kissed his cheek and whispered, "Don't make promises to kings." And he tried to smile for her. Tried so hard. But he couldn't meet her eyes. He didn't say goodbye. And that was when I knew the boy had become something else. Not yet a hero. Not yet. But already walking the path that could not be turned back. He left before noon, with nothing but his cloak, a pouch of olives, and a name that burned in his mouth like smoke. Medusa. Tell me, have you ever been caught in your own words? Not by force, but by the silence that follows them? He had, and still, he walked. Shall we go with him? There's a wind picking up, and something listens. The road away from Seriphus wasn't much of a road at all, just a sun-bleached path where goats wandered and wild thyme crept between stones. But Perseus took it like a soldier takes orders, one foot, then the next, and no room in his heart for turning around. He didn't know where Medusa lived, he didn't know how to fight her, he didn't even know if she was real. But he had said the words, and the words had taken shape. So he walked. The island shrank behind him, a smear of rock and memory, and ahead only sky, sea, and wind. I remember how quiet it was, not empty, not lifeless, just waiting. There's something about being alone, truly alone for the first time. It peels you back, doesn't it? Leaves only the raw parts underneath. He didn't cry, not then, but I felt him tighten like a rope left out in the rain, stiff, frayed, straining. He followed no map because there was none. He asked no one because who would believe him? A boy chasing a myth to win back his mother's freedom. He watched birds for direction. He slept in fig orchards. He bathed in rivers too cold for comfort. And all the while, the name sat behind his teeth like a blade, Medusa. She wasn't just a monster in the stories. She was the monster, the one you weren't supposed to even look at. Not because she'd frighten you, but because she'd stop you, end you, with a glance. And still he walked. That's the part I come back to when I think of him. Not the sword, not the glory, not the triumph they'll sing about later. This. The boy, walking into nothing, with only his fear and the promise he couldn't break. Have you ever promised something you couldn't possibly do and then tried anyway? I have. We all have. That's how the world changes. He walked until his sandals frayed and his pride wore thin, until even his thoughts grew quiet, and then, when he was just tired enough to stop asking how, they found him. But not as you might expect, not in thunder, not in dreams. No, the gods are subtler than that. They sent a stranger. Would you like to meet him? He's waiting just past the cypress grove, leaning on a staff, smiling like he knows something you don't. The cypress grove was old, older than the road, older than the island, older than even the name Seriphus, perhaps. It stood like a secret in the sunlight, dark and close and fragrant. Perseus paused before entering. The wind didn't reach inside, only silence did. And the faint smell of sap and earth and something stranger. Something watching. He took one step in, and there, between the trees, stood a man, if you could call him that. He was tall, but not in a way that needed space. He fit between the trees like water fits a cup. His cloak was dusty from the road, his sandals travel-worn, and his eyes. Well, one should always be careful of eyes that smile before the mouth does. "I've heard," the stranger said, "that you're hunting a gorgon." Perseus stopped. His hand went to his belt, but he had no weapon. The stranger only chuckled. "No sword, no shield, and yet off you go. That's bold or foolish." He tilted his head. "Though the line between the two is thinner than most know." Perseus said nothing. Just stared. The stranger leaned closer, tapping his staff once against the roots. You'll need help. A pause. Then, are you offering it? The man grinned. That depends. Are you the sort who listens when help is given? Perseus frowned. I've listened to plenty of men with power and polished words. Oh no, the man said softly. You've listened to liars. This will be different. And then he was walking, just like that, deeper into the grove, as though he expected Perseus to follow, which of course he did. Now, I won't name the stranger just yet. That would spoil the fun. But I will say this. He was not alone. The gods had taken interest, not just because of Perseus's blood, not just because of prophecy, because he had done the one thing that draws their gaze more sharply than prayer. He had chosen. He had walked toward death with no assurance of reward, no divine order, no whispered dream. He had walked because it was right, or rather because it felt like something he could not turn from. And when mortals move like that, the gods listen. In the grove, the stranger told him of a path, a winding, impossible trail across lands and stories Perseus had never seen. He spoke of nymphs who guarded secret weapons hidden by time, of gifts. Medusa cannot be fought by strength, he said, eyes suddenly grave. Not even yours. You'll need what only the gods can give, Perseus nodded. Once, and the man smiled again, like dawn creeping over still water. Then your path begins. He vanished between the trees. Not with thunder, not with lightning, just gone, like a thought you almost remember. Perseus stood alone in the grove, but now he had direction, and something else too, not quite hope, but the shape of it, ready to leave the island behind? The sea is waking, the world is shifting, and somewhere far ahead, bronze and feathers gleam in the dark. Let's walk to meet them. When Perseus left the grove, the sky looked different, bluer perhaps, or heavier, he couldn't tell. But he walked with new weight in his shoulders, not the heaviness of shame nor the stiffness of pride, but something quieter, like a rope pulled taut, like a thread finally catching in the needle's eye. He had a purpose now. Not just an escape from shame, not just a reckless promise hanging around his neck, a direction, a shape to follow. He still didn't know how he would find Medusa, or how he'd survive when he did. But the stranger had told him where to begin. Seek the Graia. And in seeking them, perhaps the gods themselves would show him more. He didn't rush. He didn't run. He moved like someone who had already decided. And oh, that changes everything, doesn't it? On the cliffs above the sea, he stopped once, just once, to look back. Seraphus was a smudge now, a thing behind him. The cottage, the olive trees, his mother's hands, and Polydectes, that serpent in silk. Perseus didn't speak aloud, but I know what was in his mind. He would return, not to offer a gift, but to end a game, and so the island fell behind him, swallowed by horizon. Ahead there were mountains, there were sisters who shared one eye between them. There were riddles and stars and weapons forged in the breath of gods. There were sandals waiting to take flight, a shield smooth enough to hold a reflection, and a helm that could swallow him from sight entirely. But none of that had happened yet. Not quite. For now, there was only a boy walking toward a storm, and the sound of his feet on the stone path, and the whisper of the gods circling closer. I remember watching him then from very far away. He looked like his father in that moment. Not in the face, but in the choice. You see, this is the place where fate begins to pay attention. Not when you're born. Not even when you speak a bold lie at a king's feast, but when you take the first step toward it, without knowing who you'll become. And now, the gifts are coming. Shall I tell you about them? Come closer. This next part is my favorite. Much love. I am Harmonia. Oh, before you go, one more thing. Traveler, if you enjoyed our time together in the halls of Olympus, there's a gift you can give in return. Just a little thing. Leave a 5-star rating and share this podcast with a friend or whisper it to the wind. The gods love a good rumor. And if you're curious about the mortal world, its twists, its triumphs, its tangled histories, come find me in my other podcast, History's Arrow. There, we follow the path of humanity, one story at a time. Until next time, walk wisely, speak kindly, and never underestimate the power of a good story. Your friend, Harmonia. This podcast sails out to you from Red Buoy Media, LLC. The stories we share are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 4.0 international. That means you can pass them along, remix them, and even argue with them. Just give us credit, don't try to sell them, and share responsibly. Thanks for listening, friend. Until our next adventure.